Recording in progress.
I heard the fat lady sing, I'm set. Today is Sunday. Everything is recording now. Sunday, October 24th, 2021. And I have to share with you smachot. At my age, it's important to share smachot. Since I taught the last class, I became infinitely wealthier. I have on Tuesday the Brit of a great-grandson, the latest edition, right across the street in Givat Mordechai. This is my eldest grandson's fifth son. And my eldest daughter sent him a note, "You're following a good example." She also has five boys. And Wednesday we have the wedding. This past Shabbos was the Yufrith. Next Shabbat I'll be away. My daughter doesn't know it, but it's Chaye Sara, and she chose a hotel that's, I think it's beyond, in the Gush, but towards Hebron. And I better tell her, and if we can get out of Jerusalem, they have the marathon, Minishamayim. Everything makes life harder. But Be'ezrat Hashem, Yetov. So I want to share with you the smachot. I have a world of comment on the various shayurim, and it's interesting that we're touching upon topics that seem to evoke tremendous interest around the world. So I'm dividing up, Elliot. What I want to say now is on this class, and tomorrow we'll talk about the other class. And I just want to deal with some halachic problems here. The question of the umbrella is going to be very interesting, because on Shabbat, I'm walking home with grandchildren. We were all together, that part of the family. Everyone got there. Everyone got there, farmed out, some in my house, the other grandmother's house, neighbors. It was unbelievable because the family is very big, Kanai and Hara. So we're walking home, and there the Shabbos fans going. And my great-grandson asks me, look, he's wearing a kippah, he's driving. So I had to explain to a kid of five going on six. I think he's a bright kid. I think he may have understood me. Then at Mariv, a dear colleague of mine who we and Rabbi Volk shared together, he's slightly older, but I was ahead of myself in learning. So, and he went on to become a rabbi, but a real PhD, not like we are. He was a chemist, taught chemistry, and there was a chaplain in the army. And he tells me he just got a Shabbos wagon, I think he called it, for his wife, who's not well. So you see that that has conquered. Now you talk about the umbrella, Rab Nevin Salas and Adam Gottel, if he already gave his haskama. And I looked again at the design of the umbrella, and look up Shmir Shabbat Gehilchata. Go to the index where he talks about agalot on Shabbos, baby carriages. I think he would be matir too, the way he talks about the yawning and the tefach, the Gemara in Shabbos with the peak on the hat. It's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen. Regarding the kosher pig, whatever they call it, and many people wrote to me that there are stores that they sell tarfis that's totally kosher, and people who are balei tshuva say, gee, this is the real thing. So I have a feeling it's going to ultimately be available, whoever wants it, because we live in two worlds. You know, everyone, Yomo quoted to me Rav Shach's critique of the Rav. And what did Rav Shach say about the Rav? That the Rav lived in two worlds, but only he could do it. The average Jew can't. The truth of the matter is we all live in two worlds, willy-nilly, whether we like it or not. And I remember the margarine. Again, I can't forget when the margarine came out, the butter industry, I don't know if you remember, Steve, the butter industry fought them. I remember my mother had to have a little, it was an orange little, like a soft pill, and you had to mix it with the margarine. They wouldn't want the margarine to look like butter. And this type of mixing you had to do in your house, and you had to keep the label on the table that it's part of. Today, it's just the opposite. If it's milchiks, you have to tell people in Israel. If you don't say milchiks, everything here is par of Baruch Hashem. All right, it remains to be seen. Regarding Kiddush Levana, I got an interesting email. This could be his Mayor Gurkov, Rabbi Gurkov, could be his Chabadnik, yeah, Chabad Center Passaic County. That's my old hunting ground in New Jersey. So the Rav, I remember I told you when they went up to the moon, So Rav Shlomo Gorin, who I don't know if you have to take him seriously. I knew Rav Shlomo Gorin, and he was a gon adir, but he was a shtickel avilda, you know. And he would say things, you got to know when you take him seriously, when you take him with a grain of salt. So he said, now we have to change. Could be midaf mishana zayin de nusach kishem sheni lo nogeya b'cha. Our enemy shouldn't touch us. Now we're touching the moon. So the Rav was upset with Rabbi Gorin, but the Rav was upset for many reasons. That's not the only reason, in my humble opinion. An article just came out in Chakira. I have to look at it. I looked at the manuscript of it and made some corrections. I got to look at it again about the machlokes over Sinai. I was sitting in the club. I don't want to go into details now, it would take too long. But here, Rabbi Gurkov quotes the Rebbe that the Rebbe also was opposed to changing it. And he said, basically, he's quoting the Rebbe now, that even little children understand what it means, that an old man on earth can try and jump up to the moon and he won't be able to touch it. So even if we can fly a spaceship up to the moon, it doesn't mean that we have to change the Nesach HaTfilah. It's a bunch, once again, the Rav and the Rebbe are speaking the same language. The whole question I wouldn't take too seriously. In other words, take it with a grain of salt. We're not running up to the moon yet. And if you notice, nothing came of it. We got a man on the moon, but what? It's how many years later? It's 69, it's 52, 53 years later. Nothing came of it, right? We achieved. We out-edged the Russians. Sputnik was put down, but I don't know. Nichyev and Irev. Now I got a very interesting question. Again, this is from YU Torah, and a person treated as a private message. Some people don't want me to mention their names. I don't know why. Maybe they're from the right-wing world and they're afraid they'll get them. But I have a good reputation. I don't know, Steve, I have a good rep in Lakewood, in Chabad, in Ger, in Israel. I mean, I don't know why they're afraid. So you spoke with Aaron Rakefet. He's a good guy. He's not so bad. He's right of center. He's not a Talmud of the Rav ordaining female rabbis. So he asked me, why is it? And I, again, these are questions, if you listen, take off 7 years and listen to my shurim, you'll get all the answers. But he asked the question as follows. Why is it that all the machleket in the Torah world is among the Ashkenazim? We have Hasidim, we have Litvakin, we have Torim Derech Eretz, Aguda, Mizrahi, and among the Svadim, you don't find this. Why is it? And I think the answer is very simple. We Ashkenazim were exposed to Haskalah at an early time. Mendelssohn left the ghetto 1762. So again, you can say it's 1760, 1765. We were exposed. And we have struggled ever since how to remain Jewish in the big world. And these are various approaches. Chassidim have their approach. I'm a Litvak. I believe the more Torah we learn, the more we're Baki Shas Paiskim. I don't know. I'm a Talmud of the Rav. You can have a PhD in Chinese literature. But Edmund Ken Gutlernin, you'll be a fabulous Jew. Torim Derech Eretz was Rav Hirsch. And you see, Rav Hirsch lived in two worlds, to quote Rav Shach. But what's fascinating is many of his own descendants rejected him. You go to America, all of Washington Heights, whatever's left of it, is more to Lakewood, not to YU. The ones that go to YU ran away to Teaneck. That's how Teaneck began, basically, a big push from Washington Heights. And they wound up with a rabbi like Shmuel Przanski. And even though he's not a YU product, right? He's a Chofetz Chaim, Rabbi Chait. What's his call? B'nai Torah, you're a Chafetz Chaim product, you know, by osmosis, also the Rav, Rabbi Chait, and they went one way. What's fascinating is the Torim, Derech Eretz people who wound up in Israel, they wound up, so you don't find one right-winger among them, you know, anti-Israel, They wound up, Apoli Aguda was built by them, Kibbutz Adati was half built by Pailisha, and the other half were Yekes. When I came in Aliyah, if you wanted to speak German, you went to Tirat Zvi, you went to the real classical kibbutzim, Moshe Luna, I remember, well, Bani Shalom, Yosef Burg, who are we talking about? So it's fascinating. But we were challenged. The Sephardic world had an advantage that until the late 1800s, they were not exposed to Haskalah. And they lived the way they lived. They say about Djerba, there wasn't one Mechallel Shabbos in the island of Djerba. Not one. The Moroccans, I mean, the Tunisians, the percentage of Shmirat Shabbat was overwhelming. And even when the Enlightenment came, and there were problems, the French tried to introduce the schools, by the way, but the Alliance was not anti-religious, but they tried to open their minds, and there was a lot of opposition from the Rabbanim, you know, look what happened to the Ashkenazim, you're going to teach them French, you're going to teach them English, look what happened to the Ashkenazim. But they were never challenged the way we were. And by the time they were challenged, the Ashkenazim reached out. And here you have to bow humbly before Lubavitch. Lubavitch sent shluchim already to Bukhara, to Georgia. You've got to give all the credit in the world. And again, I'll quote time and again, Yaakov Yosef, Rav Ovadia's eldest son, who I knew personally, was a gon adir and a tzaddik atzum. And he said time and again, the only place that the Sfadim don't feel any prejudice against them is Bnei Akiva and Chabad. And he hit the nail on the head. You go to Chabad, you'll see Chabadnikim with long beards, payas, and you say, where do you come from? Morocco, Tunisia, and there they really helped. Also, I have to mention that Yosef Eliyahu Henkin also was Rav in Georgia for a while, and they already were able to influence that is, whatever enlightenment came in, nevertheless, the core feeling remained firm. When they came to Israel, that was the real challenge. And that, of course, goes back to Ben-Gurion and Golda Meir, and that entire scholar of people who believe that religion is primitive, we have to get rid of it. Baruch Hashem, the Ashkenazim have gotten rid of it, and now we have to take the Sfadim and get rid of it. And the rest is history. And that's what we spoke about, by the way. The word I said in class, that word has a lot of depth to it. That the greatness of Rav Ovadia was not just yelling that they're prejudiced against us, we're second-rate citizens. The greatness of Rav Ovadia was he was positive. L'achzir ateret liyoshna. And that caught on. And you see today, I remember, I'll never forget this, my son-in-law, Danny, my dear son-in-law, who has the simcha this week, his final son, the middle son, who was wounded in battle, my dear grandson, getting married. So I remember one Friday, Chatani Kivni, we were going, I forgot what I was buying. I was buying some, we were looking around, could be a television, I forget, it's years and years ago. We come into the store in Talpiyot, and this is when Talpiyot was first opening up, and it's Erev Shabbos, and the Sephardic guy is waiting on us and helping us, and we thank him, and we say, we bought whatever he bought, and we say, Shabbat Shalom. The minute we said Shabbat Shalom, he started dancing in front of our eyes. The love of Shabbat, we were crying. We walked down, Danny and I had tears in our eyes. Then we both looked at each other and said, that has to be a Baal Tshuva. Has to be a Baal Tshuva. And that was Rav Ovadia. That was Shas. That was L'chzir Ateret Liyoshna. Okay, so I hope I've answered that question. Another question that I evidently offended someone listening when I said something about Rabbeinu Tam Tfilin, that my Litvish sense is a bit offended when a 13-year-old kid is putting on Rabbeinu Tam Tfilin. So Chas v'Chalila, if you're taught to put on Rabbeinu Tam Tfilin, I know, I mentioned in relation to Russia, that we, all the shluchim were told, take him two pairs of tefillin. The KGB knows that a Jew has to have two different pairs. They learned that from the Chabadnikim. And one pair you can leave there. So I just want to tell you, look at it. So this Talmud wrote to me, Rebbe, after all, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, you should try to put on two pairs of tefillin. So I just want to quote, Hilchat tefillin, Simin Lamed Dalin, I'm calling from Orechayim, Sif Katan Gimel. You have to be paskins. You should try to put on two pairs of tefillin. Lo yasakein elamisha muchzak umafusam b'chasidut. Okay, so look into the Mishnah Brura. You'll see his commentary on it. So I stand on my Litvish feelings. If Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik didn't put on two pairs of tefillin, if the Vilna Gaon didn't put on two pairs of tefillin, if Rav Chaim Brisker didn't put on two pairs of tefillin, oh boy, a little kid of 13 years says, Ani muchzak umafusam b'chasidut. All right, so I apologize. I don't mean to offend anyone, but you have to understand the Rebbe was raised in a Litvish environment. That's the oxygen I had when in my youth, in my middle age. Today, in my old age, I'm a little bit broader, and I can understand you putting on Rabbeinu Tam. But please, that's the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. Wow, chassidut. Okay. Okay, I've answered this. Oh, now, regarding the coins, now we're coming in Halacha Lemaisa. Regarding the coins, and Jack, you asked another question that I'll deal with tomorrow. That's in tomorrow's shiur. Regarding the coins, Jack sent me a link to what you have on the computer. It just, it's overwhelming. I have a printout here of all the coins with the Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei on them. And one page, look how many pages I have here, how many coins. And I tell you, I was shaking. It's Mamish Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei, Bevlomu Van Hamila. So when the Chavad Jair dealt with this question, he wasn't dealing with something, Lahagdil Torah Lahadira. He was dealing with the Sheila Halacha Lamaisa, and one coin after another. Okay.
Where are these coins from?
Germany, Austria, Austro-Germany. This is, they're probably coins here that were the very coins he was asked to Sheila on. And it's one after another. I think they were for sale. It's a whole collection. Wow. A Marxer just sold for $8.3 million, right? You're up to date. I asked my friend Barry Liebman, I called him Friday, saying who he is. He should have a refuah shleima. He's a great, great, great person, great Jew. And I said to Barry, who has the more famous daughter? My daughter's appointing Dayanim, and your daughter got $8.3 million for Sotheby's. She was the archivist, whatever they call her. And you should see the movie of her with white gloves showing off the machzor. I said, who has the more famous daughter? I don't know. I leave it open. You can decide. Okay, we have nachat. That's all I can say. She's also my student. So I said, I have more nachat than you. You, it's only your daughter. Me, I have a daughter plus a student, Baruch Hashem. Okay. You know who she's married to? Rabbi Mintz. That's Adam Mintz's wife, Sharon Lieberman Mintz. Now, regarding the stamp, we got involved. I couldn't find the translation for Kinui. And a subname, a subtitle, a nickname doesn't sound good. So I think Yehuda Rappaport said, I believe the word in English for kinui is appellation. Appellation sounds a little bit better. I'll accept it.
Nom de guerre.
That's in French is beyond me. But I was at a, when you say nom de guerre, I think that's the name of a stop in Paris where I froze in the middle of the winter. God have mercy. Don't mention that word. Don't mention the war, if you recall Faulty Towers. Okay. Now, let's pick up where we left off, and I'll come back again to some of the comments. I began this year by saying I want to tie it in with the Yom Kippur War. And you'll see, I'm mentioning this again, and I'll come back to this at the very end of this year, Be'ezrat Hashem. And the Yom Kippur War, just think for a minute, everyone is called up. Shabbos Yom Kippur, I described to you what happened. I lived it. I experienced it. I suffered through it. It wasn't easy. It was not easy at all. All our Getchkes fell before our eyes. Moshe Dayan, Golda Meir, all the great people, etc., were exposed as semi-frauds. And Kissinger, the blood of Jewish is on his, so many Jewish blood is on his hands. And now even more is revealed. If you read the biography on Rabbi Schachter, which is, I'm reading it now, and I have to say it's absolutely excellent. It's not so much on the individual, it's on the era, what he lived through. And it's very well balanced and very well researched. And you'll see there, quotes, Kissinger says to Nixon, let the Jews die, they shouldn't score a big victory. You know, everything we thought, now they've released the papers. And lo and behold, a man who spoke English with an accent, who won an award for his essay on Yishev Eretz Yisrael when he was a member of Ezra, in Germany, look what became of him, the United States. And then you ask, what happened to us Ashkenazim? Why us? Why us? In Gerber, it didn't happen. So, person is called up, so you grab what you grab. If he doesn't take his tefillin, where's he going to get tefillin? And I mentioned in passing tefillin of muksa. So Rabbi Grinstein sent me, he said, what do you mean tefillin of muksa? It's homach leikis, the Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch, why are they muksa? And it could be machas hisarin kes, not here. You can put on tefillin, you can't put on, you find tefillin, you put on. Absolutely agreed, but I don't want to get involved on those aspects, or it's a different shia. On a popular level, tefillin of muksa on Shabbos, you don't touch them. And what do? You have to pack. And I said la halacha that we paskined absolutely to take the tefillin, because without the tefillin your morale is down. And there was a lot written. I believe I gave lectures on halacha in Sahal. I believe that it was a big article in Mayan at the time, in the Poli Aguda publication. And there were other things also, because of morale. I don't know if anyone else has been in a battlefield outside of myself. But I know what a battlefield is. I was on a battlefield in 82. In 73, I volunteered. I never really was on a real battlefield. I was on the second line of defense. But in 82, I have a ribbon of the first Lebanese war, Mitzvah Shlomo Galil. And could you imagine a battlefield, bodies are lying there, and troops have to go by? There's nothing more demoralizing. So there also, they were making, you're not going to find challah, the Gemara in Shabbos, you know, put a piece of bread on, you know, move, buses, latavas, muktzain, muktzah, etc., etc. You're not going to, we were matir, move the bodies out of the way, lo aleinu, morale. Okay. So I want to thank Rabbi Grinstein. He sent me, there's a wonderful two volumes. I actually owned them and I bought them for many of my grandsons when they went into the army. They all did, outside of the last one, they all did Hesda. All my grandsons did Hesda. The last young man, Kanayin Hara, the army got hold of him. He graduated Chorev. It's a very bright kid. He graduated 16. So he was sitting and learning in Alon Shvit for a year. And he wanted to do Hesda through Alon Shvat, through a Haaretz Yom. So the army got a hold of him and they asked him, look, your grades are very good. We're interested in Atudai in this field. And he met with them and they finally agreed. He did electrical engineering at the MIT, at the Technion. And he's an officer today in weapons development in the army. And now the army sent him to go for a master's. He's the only one who didn't do, but he was in Kravi. All the other grandchildren, all my other grandchildren were all Kravi, front line, Hesda boys. So there's a beautiful book. I praise to the sky. And this is the great miracle that we have raised Rabbanim who speak the language of the land. I yet knew Steve Brzezinski's great-grandfather. He was a shamus in a shul in the Bronx, if you recall. But they didn't speak the language of the land, the Rabbanim, that whole generation. We Americans, if not for the Six-Day War, who knows what I would have built in Maplewood, South Orange, etc. But we spoke the language. We understood the mentality. In Israel today, we have a miracle. It took many years since Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook began the miracle, but we have great Rabbanim who speak the language. And here I cite to Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon. Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon, he knew who was his grandfather. Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon, whom he's named for, was a Talmud Mufak of Rav Cook. He was a poet, a writer. The grandson, Molei V'Gadish, an excellent Talmud Chacham, but the ability to speak the language of the land. Anything he writes is precious, organized. So he put out two volumes, Halacha Mimekorat Tzava. Basically, it's the laws of you're going to come in the army, and he deals with everything you can imagine, Shabbat, Kashrut, daily laws, etc. I mean, there are problems that come up in the army that you can never dream about. For instance, the troops move forward, they need food, there's no Erev, how do you get the food to them, etc., etc. It's coming Chutz L'Tchum, you're allowed to drive, Bikuach Nefesh, but what about the Chutz L'Tchum? And it deals with endless problems that you don't have in regular life. Anyway, beginning on about page 320, he deals with the whole question of tefillin. And he paskins la'alacha l'sikum hayotzei l'lechima v'choshesh la'ashir tefillin o mechsha shemeyelmu achakach. He'll leave his tefillin in the old base. The army's moving forward, right? You follow? You're conquering. You're pushing ahead. If you leave it, how are you going to go back and get it? Who knows when you'll see your tefillin again? Who knows when they'll release you, when the front line, a new unit will take over? By the way, that's when my grandson was injured. He was frontline Sanhan, and his unit was being relieved by a new unit, and as they were going back towards Israel from Gaza, they were hit by a tilim. That's how they were. They weren't injured in battle up front. They were injured retreating, going back because a new unit came in after 2 weeks to take over for them. And when are you going to see your tefillin again? Even if you know where they are. So yachol lakachet at tefillin ito v'yasim. And here he has, you'll see all the sources. I don't want to go further, it would take an hour, but you can go through it. V'yasim et tefillin betoch tik sheish badavadim shememela. And again, that takes us back to the whole thing of a basis, ledaber muksa, sheina muksa. You'll find an etza. You'll be able to carry the tefillin. Now, so you're matir because of morale. All right. Before I go further, I just want to cite to you an unbelievable source, and I thank my dear Talmud Rabbi Norman Schloss for sending this to me, and it's laughable, but it captures the modern world. And this is, Norm says it's an excerpt from the book Orthodox Jews in America, written by Professor Jeffrey Gurak, and I would like to see the book. I don't know, it's never come my way yet, but I read reviews about it. It's about the Young Israel of Parkchester. The University of Parkchester I knew very well because my best friend in school was Michael J. Hurwitz, and his parents were my parents' best friends. And they were members of the Young Israel, and that's when I knew Rabbi Schwartz, Rabbi Maurice Schwartz, I believe was his first name. It's not the Rabbi Schwartz, that's a brother who you know from Chicago, Gedalia, George. But Maurice was, I believe he was...
Parkchester.
Yeah, he was Pacha. I think it was an older brother. I don't remember. They were close in age.
A younger brother.
Because he died. Yeah, he was younger because he died. He died quite a few years before his older brother. So, on the book that Professor Gurak wrote on page, let me read it right, page 3, he says he's describing what life was like in the Bronx, and he says that Rabbi Schwartz had this shaila, that he had a congregant who really wanted to be frum and knew what Torah was, and never he had to work on Shabbos. He worked in the garment center. So He davened Shabbos morning in mid-Manhattan. Garman sent the synagogue, and from there, I've davened there many times, Mincha, when I'd been in Manhattan. And from there, he went to work. So he asked Rabbi Schwartz, since he works on Shabbos, should he put on tefillin? Okay? Now, think about that. Obviously, Rabbi Schwartz told him no, but the fact that he asked the question, fascinating. And I remember Rav Yosef Weiss, and this goes back a long way to 1953, and I remember Rav Yosef Weiss said, a balabas asked him when he has to stop eating chametz on Erev Pesach. And that year, Erev Pesach fell on Shabbos. And Rav Weiss asked him, what about Shabbos? What do you mean? You're home? And he said, no, I have to work Shabbos. And I just want to know, at what point can I still buy something chametz stick around the corner? And when do I have to stop? All right. And this was America, ad kedei kach, that Rabbi Schwartz got a question like this. And here, Rabbi Yosef Weiss got a question like this. Now, I want to come back again where we left off last week. Mishnah Halacha, Chelik Hey, Siman Kuf Chaf Aleph. And it's fascinating. Here, the question is the same question we've been dealing with. What do you do with this Apollo stamp? The question is from 1969, and it's from Menachem Moshe Eppin, from Kollel Yeshivatel. So again, I've called your attention to this, that Rav Menashe Klein received questions from all over, from Tells, from Lakewood, from YU. He was, people, Mevinim Dava, people who had a good taste, knew this man is fascinating. He'll answer the question, he doesn't care where you're coming from, and sometimes the answers, there's something in the tshuva which is very different. In this particular tshuva, there's one paragraph that is the most famous paragraph, in my humble opinion, that Rav Menashe Klein ever wrote. It's quoted and requoted, as you will see. But this person from Tells evidently was bothered by the Apollo, and he asked the same question, and he's the one that quoted Rav Moshe. And here, Rav Moshe, by 1969, Rav Moshe was the posek of the United States. There are no two ways about it. Rav Moshe didn't become Rav Moshe overnight, but he came in 37. He struggled. I don't know if you're aware. He went to Chicago or Cleveland. It was trying. Nothing worked out. Came back to New York, and then the Rosh Yeshiva, a mashgiach of MTJ drowned, he was in Coney Island, Rabbi Adler. His son was Morris Adler of Detroit, one of the three conservative reverends who issued the psak that you can drive the shul on Shabbos. That's his son. The father was an Adam Gadol, and he drowned, and MTJ needed someone to take over, and that became Rav Moshe's home. And from there, Rav Moshe became the posek. I think the Rav used to say, they call me the rabbi, they call him the Rosh Yeshiva. He says it should be just the opposite. I'm the Rosh, I give shirim, I'm known for my shirim. Rav Moshe's known a rabbi. What's a rabbi's task? The Paskin Shilas. So Rav Moshe, with that question of 1944, of it's evidently the Beit HaMetzora, here in Talbir, it's a museum. What's it called? The Handsome Museum. There's a name to it. And this Jew is going in, and he has leprosy, lo aleinu, and they'll cure him, but when he comes out, everything he came in with will be destroyed. Well, now just think for a minute. A guy's coming in, his clothes, what's the difference? He's going to get new clothes. But shoes, what's the difference? But tefillin, can he bring in the tefillin? And here, Rav Moshe Paskins, absolutely not. We saw the tshuva last week. Rav Moshe quotes the Gemara, remember I quoted to you the Gemara in Shabbos, that even to write kamiot, that there's a chash that maybe there'll be a fire on Shabbos. Remember, it's Safek on top of Safek, and you won't be able to pull it out. And we're not mekel, it's not something where Mati Rishum the Rabbonin, where there's no sheet of Mavai, bring it in. That's a Sefer Torah. But Kamiyot, Brachot, and you're not allowed to write them in your Choshesh, Shalachot, Kama Vakama, where it's actually tefillin, you're not allowed to bring on. That was Rav Moshe's psak, black and white. Okay. Now, this Talmud from Tells is asking, what do we do with Rav Moshe's psak? And then wants to show a Ken Abyssal Lerinin. He knows how to learn. So he says, look, what does it mean, canceling a stamp? You don't... go to, look at canceled stamps. You can still read what's underneath, basically. So you're canceling part of the stamp, but it may not be where it says, in the beginning, God. Remember I showed you the stamp. In the beginning, God, three dots. So maybe the part of the G, part of the O, part of the D. But there's no chance that you're going to cancel the entire stamp. So he writes to Rav, you know, with a pupil going back and forth. So it's fascinating. Once again, we got to get involved in the Haredi world. If you read the Haredi press or you read a Haredi book, you'll notice Harav Hagon, Harav Hagon, Harav Hagon, Ribbono Shel Olam. One tenth of the book you can throw away. It's what are you repeating? And I just had that problem in scholarship in what I'm working on now. So a Talmud of mine from the Kollel, the Rabbi David Feinberg, is putting it into a computer program. And when I worked on Rabbi Revel, so I sat down with Chaim Poltak. This goes back to the late 60s. And remember, I knew Chaim Poltak from childhood on, his family. As a matter of fact, today when their grandchildren, great-grandchildren, they bring them to me to tell them about their great-grandparents. There were Shomer Shabbos people, had a jewelry store in the Bronx. Who was Shomer Shabbos? Outside of butchers. And the butchers weren't really Shomer Shabbos. You understand? They were Shomer Shabbos, so the business should get a hashgacha. So, Sabalovsky is a grandson via the daughter. I believe she's alive, the only child alive yet. The older brother, eldest, was Chaim, and the middle brother was my classmate for 16 years. We were classmates. Salanta, MTA, and Yeshiva College. Then he went to JTS, and Simon Poltak. And Simon Poltak, all his kids are from. It's an amazing thing. All, I think it's four children, all, I met some of them. I cried, I was overwhelmed, from 100%. So you talk about the stamp and the cancel and the name and the titles. So when I gave the manuscripts, I sat with Poltak and we reached a decision. The first time I mentioned Mori Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Dov Levi Soloveitchik, Rav Shmuel Belkin, Rav Aaron Kotler, the first time I mentioned them with all their titles and explained who they are. Afterwards, you go back and forth, the Rosh Yeshiva, the Rav, Soloveitchik, Belkin, because you don't want to burden the people that you're writing hyperbola, rabbi. So David Feinberg was upset with me that I mentioned rabbi, and then I don't mention it. So I don't want to hurt a Talmud's feeling. We agreed, R, period. Okay, that's the compromise. But here, he writes in the tshuva to the, you can see it inside. Jack, you're looking at it? Inside, he writes to the boy from Tells, I don't know who you really are, I don't know how much you had to learn, Shlomo, you follow me, he's apologizing, maybe I didn't give you enough titles, you follow, he's apologizing to him at the start of the tshuva, but he says, Rebbe Menashe, I see you know how to learn, and what you said is interesting, and that Rebbe Moshe Feinstein, and maybe you don't erase the entire name, and here he gets involved. And here I'm going to put it very bluntly. He was caught in a tremendous dilemma because all the famous names, one by one, that you will mention, the Poskim of the 1940s, almost everyone agreed with Reb Moshe that you can't bring the tefillin into the sanitarium. They all agreed. I'll give you names, you'll see. It's all in the tshuva. And yet, something was bothering Reb Menashe Klein. And what was bothering him is irrefutable, as you will see. But he says, yeah, I heard about the case. He says, Reb Dov Beresh Wiedenfeld, the Chibin Rav, agreed with Reb Moshe. Now, a few words about the Chibin Rav. The Chibin Rav BMT began on Rehov Ababonel, 24. If you went to the corner where BMT began, Shlomo, everything that you're going to benefit from began on that street. It's a little hotel today. The building was totally modified or knocked down and rebuilt. That was the building. That was BMT. You went to the corner, Ibn Shapurt, that's exactly where the Chibin Rav lived. When the Chibin Rav came in Aliyah, he was an Adam Godly New Kola Torah Kula. He and his brother, these were Shichbam Lamala. He was in Siberia. That's what saved his life. And in Siberia, on little pieces of paper, he wrote Chidushei Torah that he was able to take out later, put in his Sfarim. And he was revered. The Chibin Rav was revered. This was Shichmo Lamala Mikolham. So in that building where he lived, they built a mikveh in the basement. That the Chibin Rav, every day he went to mikveh, Chassidish Yid, there was a mikveh in the building. Right next door to him is where Professor Menachem Alon was. You should know history. And when we opened BMT, the Chibin Rav was no longer alive, but everyone knew this was the building. You can probably visit it today. I don't know if the mikveh is still there, I remember. But Professor Menachem Alon would occasionally daven in BMT. And believe it or not, there was a guy teaching there whose original name was Rothkopf. He would come to hear Rothkopf shim. So Rothkopf told me, he went, I'm not talking about myself, but it's not nice to say. I see Elijah trying to figure out what I'm saying. It's not nice for me to say, So Rothkopf told me that he asked Professor Alon, what do you get out of my shiurim? You know what he answered? He said, I want to see the way a Talmud of Rabbi Soloveitchik thinks. And this is a true story. It was, you know, there were no Talmidim here. Think 1969. Which Talmud of the Rav was in Israel? Yeah, Jim had a few, but they weren't really Talmidim who espoused the Rav's Torah and thinking. There was no one here. And he wanted to see. We became quite good friends. All right, I can tell you more. But very fascinating. When Reb Heschel Schechter came, maybe the first time that he was known, so I remember they invited him to address the religious jurist, Professor Alon and others, judges, lawyers. If I'm not mistaken, it was in the La Rome Hotel, the Inbar that had just opened. I could be, I'm wrong. Maybe it was Madonna Malachim. And I remember they walked out, they were like shaking because Reb Heschel was too right-wing for them, halachically. In other words, they thought Talmidim of the Rav would, be broader. Then Rabbi Lichtenstein comes, and he's invited. There's absolutely every word I'm telling you is 100% true. And they invite him to address the keenness of Torah Shemal Peh of Mossad Rav Kook, right? And Rav Aaron gets up, a gonadir with Rav Aaron, is Rav Aaron. And the middle of his talk, he quotes English literature to buttress the point he's making. So Aaron said to me, they're never going to invite me again. He saw when he quoted it, they were like going for the gas pipe. So, right, these are Talmidim of the Rav. Today they have bigger problems. Rabbi Riskin, Rabbi Branda, women, etc. Baruch Hashem, Sefeltnish, there's no lack of problems from Talmidim of the Rav for better and for better. But Reb Dov Beresh Wiedenfeld also agreed 100%. Okay, now, something's bothering him, and he starts to talk. And he says, what you say is true, that letters, when you cancel, you don't cancel the whole name of God. You put a stamp on it. I mean, you look today in Israel, I don't think they stamp the letters. It's not worth their effort. You want to reuse the stamp? You're not the Chafetz Chaim. You're going to be reuse it. Gesundheit, hate. It's not worth the pennies for them to have someone working stamping. Anyway, Reb Menashe Klein raises a different problem. He says, when we throw things away now, it's interesting. No one Shlomo's age will understand what he's saying here. He says, when we throw things away, it goes into the incinerator and it's burned. Shlomo, you know what an incinerator is? How do you know? They outlawed it. They say it's not good for the air, for the climate. But when you remember the 60s, the 70s, I remember I stayed in the Fifth Avenue at the Cabot House, an incinerator at the end. Then they abolished it. They mamished, abolished it. They had to leave the garbage out, collect it every morning, but no incinerator. But he says, you're right, that you throw something away, you're going to throw it in the incinerator. So even if you don't destroy the stamp, you open it very carefully, he says. But ultimately, it's being destroyed. No two ways about it. All right? Then he makes another point. Very interesting. Reb Menashe Klein, his mind is very sharp. He makes another point that, what do you mean, mechika? Mechika, you say you're not crossing out the whole name. But Rav Menashe Klein says, when you have here, you were a rav in a shul. Didn't it ever happen on Shabbos? Rabbi, it's a problem with the letter. Is the whole letter missing? No. A drop is missing. You cut off a hay, it doesn't touch. A chet, I should say. It doesn't touch. You know what I'm saying? A little part of the letter is missing. That already puzzles the letter. So he says, maybe mechika is no different than a ta'ut in a Sefer Torah. And he says, as long as it would puzzle the letter for the Sefer Torah, then it is mechika. And he says, I can understand. We have to be machmir, Reb Moshe, Rav, the Chabina Rav. And he says, we heard other Gedolei Yisrael at the time agreed with the Chabina Rav, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, Rosh Yeshiva Eitz Chaim, Rabbi Aaron Cutler's father-in-law, and he's very upset. We have to ask him. But then he starts thinking. He says, wait a minute. Why are we certain that tefillin are going to be destroyed? A man goes into the hospital. You know what they say about war. You know how you're going to start it. You don't know how you're going to end it. Same thing with a hospital. I know stories of friends of mine went in for a routine checkup. Should have been home later that day. Within 2 days, they're on the operating table. They prepped them up, found the problem, heart, etc. You know, we're not youngsters. I have a mechutin right now. It's my grandson's father-in-law. But he went in for a routine checkup, a man in his mid-70s. Wow, had a major, I think a quadruple bypass. That's what. Baruch Hashem, he's recovering, but he has a long way to go. But it's a miracle what they can do. These are problems that 30 years ago, 40 years ago, you didn't survive. You died young. Okay? So he says the man is going to be in the hospital so many weeks. And not to put on tefillin, it troubles him. And he says, who's going to destroy the tefillin? It's not a Jew. It's the Gentile help when you leave. All right, I don't know if that's true when you do Shalayim, but he takes it as a given. He says, so, all right, you're an ones. It's not your fault. But Now you have a chiyuv to put on tefillin? And then he says, how do you know? They won't find the cure. Now, let me test the knowledge of Elliot and Steve. Baseball. Can you tell me what happened to Ted Williams when he died?
Frozen.
Only Jews could come up with a business like that. That, Shlomo, you know what I'm talking about? To get morons to have their body dissected, frozen, the body, the head, and they're going to wake you up when they find the cure and put you together again. One of us, he has children. He was married, he had children from two wives, I think. There's a big fight between them. Some of them were normal. Said, what are you, crazy? No, they went out. This is in his will. The judge ruled. Do it. And oh my gosh. So he says, maybe they're going to find the cure. And he uses the word here, disinfected. That they're going to find disinfected blaz. They're going to find a cure. So, you know, he starts to declare these sveikot, what we call Shlomo. You'll be a posek one day. You'll read Rakef Aharon Chelek Gimel in depth. Snifim. These are, you put together sveikot, snifim. You want to build the case. Then it's very interesting. He talks about two different possibilities here. We don't know what the case was clearly. Tell me, is it a Baal Tshuva, or is it a Jew who puts on tefillin every day? Let me give you a little example. As you all know, my family's in America 120 years plus. Nothing remains of it outside of from my mother, Kanain Hara. It's unbelievable what came of our branch of the family, all because of my mother sending me to Salanter and my meeting the Shanghai survivors in seventh grade. So I have an uncle. He had a little bit Jewish feeling, Uncle Max, Zichrono Levracha. Children had been married, the kid was killed in a car crash, and the priest mentioned he comes from Jewish parents at the funeral of God. And he was at the Kotel. And he was so happy, he said, I, Chabad, the Lubavitchers, put tefillin on me. It's the first time I put on tefillin since the day of my bar mitzvah. And I was amazed that at his bar mitzvah he put on tefillin. And mind you, his father, my grandfather, learned in Volozhin, the new Volozhin, after it was reopened again, after it was closed down, 1895, in that period. He learned in Volozhin. And he could quote the Maharis by heart. And there was some, my grandparents were not devoid of Torah feeling, but America, totally, he was more assimilated. His wife was already from Gedolei Yisrael, that's how I relate to Rabbi Revel. Now I understand my grandparents, what they suffered to see what was coming of the kids, and they didn't realize what was becoming of them in the United States. So he raises two possibilities here, very fascinating. No, someone ever put on tefillin. Kafta the lo munach tefillin. Ein lo chelik l'olam haba. What does that mean? Does it mean you skipped a day or you never put on in your life? So he says, I don't know. He talks about a Baal Tshuva. How can we deny a Baal Tshuva the ability to put on tefillin at least once in his life? Kafta the lo munach tefillin. How can we deny him? And if, on the other hand, it's someone like Yomo, who from the age of 18, I will trust, never missed a day putting on tefillin, am I right? 18 is right? Give me a year. No. Approximately, am I right or wrong? No, you never missed a day of putting on tefillin. Since, all right, let it be my way. Elliot never missed a day of putting on tefillin since he was 12 and 11 months. I never missed a day also, 12.
I had bar mitzvah when I was 13.
And you put on tefillin?
Yes.
And you started putting on regularly?
Around Bar Mitzvah then, yes.
Oh, beautiful. So beautiful. So that's who Rav Menashe Klein's talking about. Imagine if it's someone who puts on tefillin every day, how can you deny him the right to put on tefillin? What will it do for him psychologically? So you see, he's saying, either way, whether or not you take the viewpoint, kaftar the lomanach tefillin means you're not putting your life. He's a Baal Tshuva. Let him put on once. How are you going to take away tefillin? Or if he's not a Baal Tshuva and he puts on regularly and suddenly he's going to miss a day, he's going to feel terrible. Miss a week? Miss a month? Who knows when he'll get out? He'll feel terrible. Terrible. Wow. So you see, something is starting to bother him. And here he's caught in the quagmire. Reb Moshe Asas, the Chibina Asas, Rabbi Sazam Melza Asas. He quotes here that he heard the Chazon Ish Asas. It bothers him. Shlomo, you came right in time. He drops an atom bomb here, which no one in the world can differ with. He says, with all due respect, I have a Maisa Rav that proves absolutely allowed to bring the tefillin in and to put them on every day. And he brings the Maisa Rav, he says, I was in the concentration camps. Quoting, looking word by word. And whoever could smuggled in tefillin. And he says, whoever could put on tefillin every morning. He says, here, there was no two ways about it. You weren't dreaming of disinfectants and scientific progress. They caught the tefillin. They threw it into the flames. No two ways about it. The afilu hachi kol mishahaya yachal hevi ito tefillin. Vitafasnu lahaniach tefillin vichipasnu. We searched in the concentration camp. How can we put on tefillin? How can we find tefillin? V'kamalakinu aleinu. How much did we suffer? Were we beaten? Were we punched? Were we whipped? V'lo haya potzei peh u'mitzavtzeif. Shelo lahaniach tefillin mishum biziyom hatefillin o mishum sheyisrafam. And he says, no one questioned this practice. Ah, you'll be caught, they'll destroy it, they'll throw it away, they'll stomp on it, they'll burn it. No. The Adarabba, b'yetzara u'gzeira, Olenu la'asot kol asher b'yadenu l'kayem ha-mitzvah im efshah. V'im yasu akum ha-chas v'chalila b'zayon al ha-tfilin, mi sh'ha-yecholet b'yado yivakesh el bonam. Powerful words. And if the Germans, the non-Jews, come and embarrass the tefillin, destroy the tefillin, denigrate the tefillin, let the one who is all-powerful take up the bizayon of the tefillin. And there's no question that there's nothing more powerful than our being alive, having children, rebuilding Yiddishkeit, putting on tefillin, building mikvot, This is our greatest revenge. And I have to say, with all my problems with the present government, once again, our Prime Minister has created a Kiddush Hashem. Beautiful. Shabbat Nisushi. How do you pronounce it? Again?
Sochi.
You listen to the way Yomo says that he knows Russian, I don't. But what a Kiddush Hashem. And you got to give Chabad credit. Within minutes, they respond, they build. Everyone has their role in life. I may have a problem seeing a 13-year-old Chabadnik put on two pairs of tefillin, but I'm overwhelmed by their greatness of responding to the challenge. And this is our greatest, let the Almighty take revenge. We're dancing on Hitler's grave. Again, it's not simple. 6 million Jews, 1.5 million children, what we have gone through. But take a look, 2022 already, and Yiddishkeit, Prime Minister of Israel, B'fnei Am Ve'Eda, the New York Times is choking. They have to write that the meeting with Putin took 5 hours, and you should know Elkin, my daughter, he's the one who ran after my daughter, he and Saar, to be on the committee. He wears a big kippah. He's, I get upset, but it's a fashion. I see some of my closest friends, grandchildren, children, they wear this kippah like the Prime Minister, and Elkin sitting there with a big kippah and speaking Mama Lushin with Putin. He's translating back and forth. And what a Kiddush Hashem. And as Reb Menashe Klein says, let the Ribbono Shel Olam take revenge. It's not for us to be concerned. We have to do the mitzvah. What happens later? Well, anusim. It's Goyim. It's not in our hands. But we have to do the mitzvah. New Yomo, what do you have to say? I haven't
said Mama in this case it means Russian, not...
I would hope that Dr. Charlie Hexter understood me well. He didn't believe for a minute that Putin speaks Yiddish. But who knows, Charlie? It may very well be that Putin spoke Yiddish. Right or wrong, Yomo, he shared an apartment with the Ehrlich family. He knows what a Gemara is. He knows what a Tanakh is. He spoke about it to the Russian Jewish Congress. So Ken signs them, but all right, we'll give Elkin the benefit of the doubt that his Russian is better than his Yiddish. No, Yomo, the Rebbe has written so many books, so many pages published. What does this remind you from the Rebbe's writings? Reb Menashe Klein is quoting something, telling us something, reliving something, describing the concentration camps. No, we're searching for tefillin. We want to put on tefillin. Steve, I refer you to the Silver Era beginning on page 243. This is one of the most famous stories ever. Simon Wiesenthal later wrote a book with this title from this story. Simon Wiesenthal described this encounter with Silva in a DP camp. Previously, during April of 1945, a train from Hungary arrived at the Mauthausen death camp. One of the newcomers succeeded in smuggling in a small prayer book. Wiesenthal, at first, greatly admired the individual for his courage, since he knew the strict regulations against bringing anything like a prayer book into the camp. This admiration soon turned to dismay when Wiesenthal observed the man lending his prayer book to other inmates for 15 minutes of peace in return for a quarter of each person's daily soup ration. When Silva arrived in Wiesenthal's displaced persons camp with a Torah scroll brought from America, Wiesenthal said, "I will not attend the service of dedication." He told his friends, He could never forget the greedy man who had bartered faith for food. Recent or later, he ate it. That night, Data related. That night, Rabbi Silver came to see me. It was a small man who wore an American Army uniform without insignia. Look at the cover of the Silver, you'll see the picture. He had a small white beard, and his bright eyes shone with great kindness. He must have been at least 75, but his mind was sharp and his voice was youthful. He told me he had been born in the Ukraine, the country of pogroms, and had emigrated as a youngster to America, the country of hope. He put his hand on my shoulder. "So they told me you're angry with God," he said in Yiddish. And he smiled at me. Wiesenthal said, "I'm not angry with God, but with one of his servants," and told Reb Lazer what had happened. He kept smiling. "And that's all you have to tell me?" "Isn't that enough, Rabbi?" I asked. Duma, Yiddish, silly man, stupid man, Duma. "Duma," he said. "So you look only at the bad man who took something from the good ones? Why don't you look instead at the good men who gave something to the bad ones?" He touched me with his outstretched palm and left. I went to the service the next day. Ever since, I have tried to remember that there are two sides to every problem, although sometimes it is as difficult to see as the other side of the moon. Do you recognize that? He later writes a memoir, The Other Side of the Moon, from that story. And that's a very powerful story, which I would say complements and supplements the beautiful words of Rav Menashe Klein. And a Maisa Rav, if you've heard my lectures over the years, the Gemar Baba Batra, Maisa Rav, you can't argue with a Maisa Rav. That is halacha l'maisa. It's exactly what I've spoken about so many times. The Gemara in Bracha Daf Mem Dalet, Amid Bet, Fuk Chazi Mayamad Devar. It's exactly the Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Samech Vav Amir Aleph, Im Lo Neviyim Heim, B'nei Neviyim Heim. And this Maisa Rav, you can't argue with. And that's exactly what he paskins lahalacha, that ultimately, if you can't help yourself and there's no solution, you absolutely can be samach on what happened in World War II and someone going into a Beit Metzora with all your fears that you won't be able to take the tefillin out, but now you can put on tefillin. This is tefillin. This is allowed. Don't worry about tomorrow. Now, one second. Let me end off this part of the shir. So we began with the tefillin, the army, the morale. And I have a wonderful Talmud, Rav Nachman Shmayahu's Hazak, comes from Gedolei Gedolei Chabadnikim. It's a tremendous family. And I had a little bit of an influence on him. He's become a historian. He deals with archives. He's been my Talmud many, many years. So he sent me, the Rebbe spoke about the Shaila. And here you have it, Shulchan Menachem, Chelek Aleph, Siman Mem Bet. Page Kuf Lamed Bet. And it's a kafida. Am I pronouncing it right? With the urine, I've had friends of mine, Lo Aleinu, that had this problem. They attach a kafida and the urine does not come out the normal way. It goes out through a tube. And are you allowed to daven?
Catheter.
How do you pronounce it?
Catheter.
Catheter. Here, the Hebrew would be, catheter. It makes sense. And here he deals with the Shiloh. And you see what he says. I don't go into all the halacha now, but he says it could be that this doesn't have a din of meraglayim, because it doesn't come out the normal way. It comes out directly from the body to this artificial, what would you call it, this artificial plastic bag that they have attached. So it could be, and what he says, the Rebbe says, that a person shouldn't daven, a person shouldn't put on tefillin. He says, this may be sakonat nefashet. Look what the Rebbe says. Hamniyah mitfilah v'talmud Torah vaday tif'al chalishat hadat umemela gam chalishat habriyut shel hachole v'kame inyanim hitiru mitam zeh. And wow, look what you see here, that the Rebbe says psychologically the impact this will have on the person. You can't daven, you can't put on tefillin. It'll affect his whole health. And by the way, anyone who studied medicine, absolutely so. In addition to the physical matters, the psychological well-being of the person who is ill, they complement each other. I remember when my grandson was wounded in battle, when he came out of the hospital after the operation, they finally sent him up north. He was operated on Soroka and Be'er Sheva, which they brought him right from the battlefield. From us, it was the closest hospital. So they finally sent him, and finally he was in Hadassah, then he's released, and they assign him to a surgeon, a psychologist, and a social worker. The army is lo aleinu, we're well prepared, we've been through this. And the surgeon was in case, turned out the surgeon was a brother of students I taught, so he had VIP treatment. What I'm telling you, Yomo, protexia, use it in what we were talking about earlier. So the surgeon was a brother of students of mine, and he gave my grandson his cellular phone number, said anytime there's any bleeding, you call me immediately. Cellular phone, okay. Why the psychologist? That his morale should be good, okay? And the social worker, she was in charge of everything, whatever has to be done, everything is online, everything. Baruch Hashem, he totally recovered, but took a while. All right, this is the Rebbe speaking. And you look into a footnote, in the footnote, they quote the Minchat Yitzchak, with Yitzchak Isaac Weiss, the Abbot in Manchester, then the Eder Haredit, and he's talking about the same Shaila with the Choleh B'machla HaMitabeket, Shetzarich Liot B'Beit Cholim Shesofim Shom Koma Shemevi, and the whole Shaila, can you bring in tefillin? And the Minchat Yitzchak says that the Shaila came up and the person involved was a Yorei V'Chored L'Dabar Hashem who never missed a day of putting on tefillin. And we didn't know what to do. And one of my Balabatnim showed me a tshuva where the Lubavitcher Rebbe calls him Harav HaGoyin HaTzadik Mi Lubavitch Shlita. And he quotes this very tshuva that I just cited to you, and he says, Chalishat Hadat, the psychological question, is just as important as the physical. And if the Rebbe indicates, and the Rebbe says, I'm not a posek, but you know, the Rebbe never paskined. He would send you to the poskim. In Chabad, there were rabbonim who were poskim of hakim, and he would say, you have to ask a posik, you have to ask a posik. But occasionally the Rebbe said certain things that you couldn't avoid, such as Yontef Sheni and how many days, and if you miss the dateline, you can wind up with 3 days Yontef Sheni. You know, I can't go into it now, but I spoke about it decades ago. So the Rebbe at times would say things that you can't avoid. And here where he talks about the Chalishat Hadad, absolutely take that into consideration. And if we're matir him to daven and put on tefillin with a kachada, certainly we're going into a bait of what do you call it? Leprosy, a leprosy hospital. Alacha kama v'kama, you can go in with tefillin, and you don't have to be concerned what ultimately will happen. And here, Rabbi Shadrach sent me a commentary on this, evidently written by Lubavitcher, who went through all the Shelet and Shuvah, and at the end he writes that this Svara, Kvod Kedusho, Admur mi Lubavitch, none of the poskim mention it. He's the first one. And he's matir halacha chado brura. He's matir halacha black and white, no doubt about it, the psychological well-being. Well, I can say that with Menashe Klein, once that was published, no different than the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He doesn't quote the Rebbe, but the Rebbe doesn't quote him either. Each one says it on their own. But a Maisa Rav, what happened in World War II, you cannot run away from a Maisa Rav. Okay.
I remember in the Shut Min Amamakim of Rav Osher,
right,
a similar tshuva of someone being sent to a sanitarium in Kovno because he had typhus.
Uh-huh.
And the hospital will destroy everything. And he asked this question about Phil. I'll get you the source.
Good.
And Rav Oshri, if I remember correctly, told him to bring the tefillin.
Right.
It was so uncertain in any event.
Right. Let me look at it, because I'm familiar with Rav Oshri. Remember I quoted the great when I gave 5 years on 7th of the Holocaust. Okay. Let me go one step further. You see, Rav Menashe Klein, there's a certain brilliance and charm to him. I'll put it that way. Problem is, he stood up to Reb Moshe, and if you stand up to Reb Moshe in the 1970s, it got caught up already with the litvish lack of understanding of Pesach, let's be honest. And of course, the feeling of how do you dare argue with a Gadol B'Torah? But if you're going to take that attitude, we may as well stop learning Mishnah Gemara. So many arguments, so much machlokes, Tanoim, Amoraim, etc., etc. And we don't weigh up who's more important, less important. All right, a Tana is a Tana, an Amora is an Amora, but we don't start giving out grades. Each one, you have to understand what they're saying. Rabbi Yisrael Shaya, the Mishnah and Ediyot, we're not Machmir all the time, we're not Mekil. Each time you have to think on your own how you understand it. And of course, I'm referring to the controversy of the Eruv. That was the controversy. Controversy between Reb Moshe and Reb Menashe Klein over putting a plastic covering on your hat in Shabbos, that didn't shake the world. But the controversy of whether Brooklyn is Reshut HaRabim D'Oraita and the Borough Park and Flatbush, that already shook the world for better or for worse. Okay, now, all that we're talking about is based upon our understanding that there's Kedusha to a stamp with God's name, right or wrong. Baruch HaTov and Melech Olam Shekol Yevet Barok. In the next tshuva, Siman Kuf Chaf Bet, the next tshuva, Reb Menashe Klein raises the very issue, is there Kedusha? What does Kedusha mean? What does Kedusha mean? Shlomo, have you ever seen a sofa at work? All right. Do you know that the sofa every day goes to mikveh? He's Mekadosh himself. He's going to write Shem Hashem. All right, that's Kedusha. Take a get. What makes a get a get? Can you pick a get out of the garbage? For the sake of argument, you find the get. Oh, my name is on it. My wife's name is on it. What's the difference? It was written 10 years ago for some guy decided not to divorce his wife. What makes a get has to be written l'shma, l'shma, l'shem gerushin, right or wrong? Tell me, can you print a get? Computer. I'm filling in the ketuvah tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem. My grandson has got it from the rabbin. I have to get everything. I don't like to do it at the time of the wedding because there's always a tumult. And I want to come prepared. Also, I want to Xerox the copy for the government and have them sign both of them. And I hold on to the copy till I know the government got it and they're registered as married. You understand? The mail I don't trust, so I already arranged with the father of the bride, because it was the rabbi in Givat Shmuel. I said, at the wedding, I will give you the copy that has to go to the government. I want you to bring it in person. And when I know that it's brought in and everything is revised, they get it to Dat Seichut, they're married, then I can throw away the copy. Now tell me, a ketuvah, can I pick out of the garbage? What do you say? A ketuvah you can actually take out of the garbage. There's no concept of lishma. All a ketuvah is a guarantee that you're a decent individual. You follow me? You gave your wife a ketuvah? I should hope so. No, what does the ketuvah say? It says that you're going to support her. Today, you know, we got to really question, do we need a ketuvah? Do women make more money than we do? This is our great tragedy. So many women don't want to get married. I was just asked on Shabbos, so many women, so many men unmarried. The men are, you know, women look at the men, they're stupid. We can make more money. And a man of, who's smarter, you or your wife? Take my word for it, your wife is smarter. Bina yitayra ben Hashim, an open Gemara. And you, Shlomo, you come from Annapolis, you don't argue with an open Gemara. Believe me. All right. But we Ketuvah is a din from the Gemara, maybe the Oraita, it could be the whole question, the basic sum of money, etc., etc. All right. A Ketuvah, there's no din of Lishma. But a Torah, I get. Tell me, Svarim, aren't we supposed to write a Sefer Torah? Isn't that any Jew who can... A king has the right to Sefer Torah. But a regular Jew, if you can afford it, you have to write a Sefer Torah. They were right. The Rishonim already alluded to it. The Achronim certainly spelled it out. We're Makayim the Mitzvah of a Sefer Torah when we buy Svarim. Right or wrong? The purpose of a Torah is to learn from it. And today, you buy Shas, you buy Poskim, you buy Tveis, you buy Igrot Moshe, Mishnah Halachot, you're Makayim. So tell me, do you need Kavana to write? So it's very interesting. He raises the question, and he says that it could be that really where there's real Kedusha, where you impart it, is when you do it l'shem, when you write a Sefer Torah, before you write God's name, you have to have kavanas that you're writing it for the Kaddish Baruch Hu, etc. There are all types of kavanas that a sofer has. When you write a get, you have to put in these names, very important. But when you print something, is there any kedusha? And he says this could very well be that when you print something, there's no real kedusha. In other words, we by Shravim, we Yotzei, we're learning, but a Sefer Torah, it's not. A Mezuzah, it's not. All of you know that there were always problems when the people photographed Mezuzah. There were always people that will do shtick to make money. I don't have to tell you. I was very naive, but after living as many years as I've lived and seeing what goes on in the world today with this, the cyber attacks on hospitals. I mean, just think to put a hospital that it can't work properly. So, all right. I can't say that this is real Kedusha. If that's the case, you talk about stamps. They print hundreds of thousands of stamps. What? Is that sanctity? Is that Kedusha? Does it have holiness? And that may be what the Chavadjim meant. Remember I quoted to you, Lahotzi. They printed, but I tell you, when I looked at the coins, when the coins that Jack gave me the link, I was shaking. Yud Kei, Vav Kei, right, clear, all right. But nevertheless, Lahotzi, it's printed, it's done, it's not humans, it's a machine. All right. So he raises that question. And he says that we don't have a black and white answer. He said, he quotes from the Marashtam, from the Marashtam that already Rishonim raised the question, if a get is printed, you copy it, it's photographed, maybe it's a good get? Maybe all you have to do is put the names in, right? Right? The question, that you have to do to give it the shma to divorce. But it could be that everything printed, we say it does have some kedusha. Or no, printing is not like writing a sefer Torah. It's not like writing something sacred. It doesn't have that same kedusha. And yes, could be your Mekayim, the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah, Mikomakom, Harei Mosif Sfarim Lumod Behem, but he remains with the Tzorichiyun. But this too is another sniff, another reason why you can take a stamp and you don't have to worry about it. It's Lahotzi, they printed 100,000, a machine printed it. The machine doesn't know what Yiddishkeit is about. They did 100,000, well, they wouldn't do so many coins. They did a few thousand coins with God's name on it, but it's done by a stamp. Whatever way you print on money, it's not really creating Kedusha. So this may be another sniff. There's more to the tshuva. You'll see what he comes up with in a minute. He touches upon in the next paragraph a problem on which many doctorates have already been written at Hebrew U, at Bar Ilan, the Meiri, his viewpoint. We'll see next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. Okay, let me summarize before I open it. I apologize to all the people looking at me from the beautiful screen in front of me, such wonderful, world-famous people, Rabbanim, professors, doctor, PhDs, etc. Chassidic Rebbeim ultimately listened to the shir, and we've established that. But I have a number of people in front of me. I have a classroom. It's spread out. It looks like it's full. It's really not, but everyone is sitting a distance from the other one. So I have to look at the students in front of me. They come first. It's like when you come into the bank. In the days that there was a bank, there's no bank anymore. But I used to get all upset. She's on the phone. Idiot, I'm standing in front of you. The phone call is... The human being in front of you comes first. Now, Baruch Hashem, this is a wonderful country. Of course, I come in and I show that this card. Anyone over 80, could you imagine? You get a, and it works. Patur mitur, ezrach vatik. And it works. Twice in the post office, I felt bad, but I pulled it. I pulled the shtick. My brother said he pulls it. I pulled it. Oh, they salute you. You're over 80 and you're still walking. Ashreinu shezachinu. My dear students, to reiterate, it was quite a shiur today. Mark, you gotta sleep at night. You gotta sleep at night. You gotta keep better hours. But listen to the tape, because what I quoted is unbelievable. This is Reb Menashe Klein. This is classic Reb Menashe Klein. Only he could write like that. And there's no question that with all the Gedolei Yisrael who said, don't bring the tefillin into the Beit HaMetzora, but Rabbi Menashe Klein said, we did it in the Holocaust, Maisa Rav, and you take a look, here is the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and that's exactly what they paskened in Milchemet Yom Kippur. Imagine, tell a soldier not to take tefillin. Lo Aleinu, many took their tefillin Many tefillin never came back. Many tefillin were burned. I don't know if you know, but in the Mitzvah Shlomo Galil, Hez the boy suffered tremendously in the tanks. Tefillin were destroyed. And I set up a fund single-handedly. People still thank me until today. Anyone who lost tefillin and doesn't have the means to replace them, we will replace them. And we did it. Some people refused, said, no, Rebbe, it's okay. I have the ability to replace others. We gave Lamahadran the best tefillin possible. So we're going to pick up just where we left off. And if anyone here is an insurance agent or has a friend an insurance agent, grab him by the collar and bring him to class next Sunday. Because once we finish the stamp, we go on to a question that will greatly trouble Yomo when he sees what the Gedolei HaPoskim have to say. Do we sell insurance? Or do we say, HaBoteach Bashem, Chesed Yesova Venho? Gentlemen, tomorrow I wouldn't miss this year for all the celebrations in Chabad around the world that they were able to work out a beautiful Shabbat for the Prime Minister and his entourage in an isolated Russian resort by the sea known as, let me hear it, Yomo, Sochi. Okay, I pronounced it right this time around. So tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, Be'ezrat Hashem, we pick up exactly where we left off. I'll answer Jack's question. I go into the Rebbetzin. Tomorrow, it's a class for anyone who's going to be involved in outreach. Try to understand what's going to happen tomorrow. It's not me. I'm going to quote sources. Open up hearts. Shlomo, very important. Anyone in outreach, anyone who speaks English, grab them in by the collar. I'm sorry I can't pay you. It's not Rabbi Goldschneider's class, but I hope it'll be worthwhile. Are there any more questions here until we meet again in health and happiness? Das Vidanya. Yomo, open it to the great world beyond us. Unmuted? Can, okay, anyone have any question? Do you hear me? Let me see that you're...
Yeah, we can hear, Rebbe.
Yeah, go ahead.
Three things quickly. There were two Rabbi Schwartz brothers who were rabbis in the Bronx. One in Young Israel Park, Chester, and one in Pelham Parkway.
Well, one second. The one with George winds up in Chicago. He began in New York. It could be he's the one from Pelham Parkway.
No, but wasn't he in Young Israel of Borough Park?
I don't know.
Rabbi Gedalia Schwartz was in Young Israel of Borough Park.
Oh, he's from Borough Park.
His brother Maurice
was in Parkchester.
Later, the younger brother took over in Parkchester also.
Wait, what do you mean a younger brother?
There were three brothers.
So right. So
one was in Pelham Parkway. I had a great aunt who lived in 1410 Wood Road in Parkchester, right near Young Israel.
What was his first name, the one in Pelham
Park? Maurice, I think.
No, Maurice.
The one who was in Park, originally in Parkchester, I think was Maurice.
Maurice.
Sure.
Maurice was the one I... No. Maurice was the one I knew. And what are you saying? He went to Pelham Parkway and who took over Parkchester? What was the name of the third brother? I don't know. I knew Maurice, I knew George. George is Gedalia. I knew them. Adam Gadol, they were both Lamdanim, but Gedalia became something very special. Gedalia became very special. He was married to the Valesha Rub's daughter, his first wife. She died and he remarried afterwards. But they had a wonderful marriage, and she was Rav Pupko's daughter. She was a niece, a great niece of the Chafetz Chaim. There's a relationship to the Chafetz Chaim there. Check it out.
Rabbi Rakefet?
Yeah.
The youngest brother was Shimon.
Shimon Simon. Okay, thank you.
That sounds right.
That sounds right. Okay.
I had Sheva Brothers in the shul in Pelham Parkway once.
Okay.
For someone.
Okay.
Regarding the Maaseh Rav, The case with tefillin in the camps was shmat and kilayon, where people were required to be moser nefesh. Would that make a difference in psak?
He doesn't make any differentiation. Neither he nor the Lubavitcher Rebbe make a differentiation. They're dealing with the morale, with the feeling, with the zest. Hitler, Schmad, I don't even know if Hitler was Schmad, because Hitler killed every Jew. It had nothing to do with being religious. It was just total annihilation of the Jewish people. So it's a little bit hard to say that it's changing your shoelace. Even if you change your shoelace and you were one quarter Jewish, Hitler killed you. Okay, so I don't know if that affects. That's the old question. Why did they call 6 million Jews Kedoshim? A lot has been written on this, including yours truly. Why I published in Tradition, then I published it in Rakafet Aron Chelik. That perhaps Chelik Aleph, I don't remember. So the same question. Why are they called Kedoshim? It had nothing to do with you putting on tefillin and being firm and refusing to change your shoelace or refusing to be Mechalo Shabbos. But it could very well be that if they kill you because you're Jewish, that gives you the status of Kedoshim. It's based upon a Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's a famous tshuva of the Chatam Sofer. I quote it. If you have Rakafet Aron, look it up.
Kilayon.
Okay, so it could be. But all what you're saying is fascinating. It's an interesting question. Halacha l'maisa, it doesn't affect the psak.
And what you said about Chaim Patak, when Miriam Sabalowski, now Shields, was in the Chidon HaTanach, I was sitting next to Chaim Patak's wife in the audience in Teatron Yerushalayim. I happened to have a camera with me, and she asked me to take a picture of Miriam for her. It's before digital photography, so I told her it probably wouldn't come out, but I took it from where we were sitting. I took it anyway, but it didn't come out.
No, that's the family. Sobolovsky is married. Rabbi Sobolovsky is a grandson of the Potocks. He's a nephew to Chaim and Simon. He's from the baby daughter. I remember as a little girl. That's his mother. If I have it right, it's ancient history. But I remember the grandparents had a jewelry store that was Shemesh Shabbos. That was unheard of in the Bronx. And they were wonderful people. And Simon was my classmate. We were bosom buddies. We were good friends. Ein Kleinigkeit, Simon Potat. All right, it's a world gone by. You know, many of the people I went to school with are no longer alive. Simon died quite young. It's years ago. But as I said, I understand all four children are Shema Torah mitzvah. So kol hakavod. I don't think Chaim Potak's family was zeicher to what Simon was zeicher, but there too there has to be some traces, good traces of Yiddishkeit left. All right, mekavel tov. Mekavel tov, that it should be like we zayin a good the better phones, that we recall his parents fondly, and they should do what they can that we should go further in dignity. Any more questions?
Hey, Rebbe, a double mazel tov.
Thank you. Right. I started the class. I said I became ultimately wealthier because on Tuesday, a great-grandson was born, a new great-grandson. And Shabbat, we had a lot of joy. We were all together. And just watching my great-grandchildren, the big ones, the little ones, the new arrivals, and each one goes their way, each one is different, the way the Ribbono Shel Olam made the world, no two are exactly alike. And it's great nachat, ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu, and I wish I could show my grandparents what came out of our family. And I bow humbly, and my brother too would agree with me. My middle brother, my youngest brother, didn't have the same experience. But Reb Henich Fishman, Reb Geshen Yankelevich, and Reb Henich Fishman, my seventh grade Rebbe, my eighth grade Rebbe, my brother. I was particularly close to Reb Henich, and my brother was particularly close to Reb Geshen. And Reb Geshen said to me many years later, I met him in NYU. I was being honored by NYU. And I said, I was in your seventh grade class. You were my Rebbe. And he said, no, 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 I've given fire a bruta. Du bist a Talmud, ihr bist a Talmud from Reb Henich. And I later went to my my album when I graduated, and you know, the autograph album that at one time was the most valuable possession in my life. Excuse me, let me finish. And I Xeroxed the page of Reb Geshen Yankelevich's blessing to me, and I sent it to him at YU to prove that I too was his Talmud. But he was right, I was closer to Reb Henich. And my brother was closer to Reb Geshen. Yeah, what did you say, Mark? Anybody?
Rabbi, just one question. You mentioned Chaim Potok. He was one of the editors I know on the JPS and the Tanakh that they translated. And I was wondering, because I was looking at it recently, they have a list of all the people who worked on it. There was a Rav David Shapiro. He was like the Orthodox
Rabbi Rav. David Shapiro was Rav in Milwaukee, if I'm not mistaken. He was a graduate of the Hebrew Theological College in Chicago. It's an open argument who was the greatest Lamdan who graduated there. Some say Rabbi Chevel, some say Rabbi Shapiro. You know Rabbi Shapiro. His daughter is Ayelet Bat. She was married to Rabbi Aaron Bat, the great Rabbi Bat. I miss him. She has paid a very heavy price for what we have here. Her grandson was killed in the massacre at Merkaz HaRav, and her daughter and son-in-law, who worked in this very building, was a Yid HaTzadik. What was his name? He worked in Torah Shraga. Rabbi, he ran Torah Shraga. He went to mikveh every morning. Mark, Rabbi, what was it in Hebrew? Moshe Mark. He was killed, and his wife, Ayelet's daughter, was very badly injured. And until today, she suffers. It's not something that they could bring her back to what she was before. The Ribbono Shel Olam, she gives strength. Those are Rabbi Shapiro's direct descendants living in Israel. There may be more. Yeah.
But he's not alive anymore either, is he?
No, he's not alive for years.
Because I think there's only one person left from the committee. I think the Reform Rabbi who was on that committee, I think he's 100 years old. He's the only one left alive.
What's his name? What's the Reform Rabbi's name?
Rosenzweig, maybe, or something, Rosen something. He was a rabbi in Philadelphia, maybe, or something like that.
I don't know. Rabbi Rubin, do you recognize the name from Philadelphia? No, Rabbi Rubin doesn't recognize. By the way, Rabbi Mickey...
I can find it. I think he's the only one still alive from the whole community. Uh-huh.
So Rabbi Mark is a first cousin to the person who headed the Mossad. Cohn, that's his first cousin. Could you believe it? That's his first cousin. And I tie in, my brother's wife is also a cousin to the person who headed the Mossad. She comes in from the Cohn family. He comes in through the mother. It's amazing what a small world that you live in Israel and you're related to all these famous people. All right, there's a lot to talk about living in Israel. We have a lot more to do better here and to create a fabulous Torah society. Ribbono Shel Olam.
I found it.
Our work is cut out for us. Yeah, go ahead.
Martin Rosenberg was the rabbi's name.
Martin Rosenberg.
New Jersey. Maybe New Jersey, Philadelphia, I'm not sure.
I don't recall that name from my rabbinate in Philadelphia, New Jersey, but that doesn't mean anything. I wasn't a bucky in all the reform. Joachim Prince, I knew him. He lived up the hill from me. Oh, when he spoke, it was like God coming, like Moshe Rabbeinu coming down from Mount Sinai. Oh, Ribbono Shel Olam, what they... There's probably not a Jew left alive today from his shul, the descendants. Maybe those that Baruch Hashem Chabad picked up, or Sameach picked up, or Eish picked up, but NCSY, but beyond that, nothing with nothing. One of my best stories, I'll end off with this, you talk about the outreach, which is so crucial. So when I came to Michala, there was someone who had come in Aliyah around the time we did it, right afterwards. And I once met him. His name was Stanley Shulson. I hope he's alive. I know he wasn't well. His father was a state senator in Connecticut, if I'm not mistaken. Shomer Shabbos. And Stanley, I meet him at the Xerox machine. And he's Xeroxing articles I wrote in Jewish Life. So I asked him, what are you doing with that? He said, oh, I teach the girls English. And they love these articles about Gedolei Yisrael, and it fits right in with what we're trying to do in Michola, teach English, but also something different than the English they would teach at Hebrew University. So we became quite friendly. So I asked him, and we became friendly, he, his wife Joan, and I asked him, what did you do in America? He taught in a high school out in the island. So he describes, he taught in this high school, it was like 70% Jewish. Yeah, they didn't know a word of Yiddishkeit, Reform temples, conservative temples. And then he comes in Aliyah, and he kept one Seder every morning in Or Sameach. Comes in, I believe it's Or Sameach, not Eish, I may be wrong. Comes into Or Sameach or Eish, and he sees the students there, and he meets gangsters from Long Island with beards and big kippot. And they say, they look at him, they say, hey, wait a minute, you're a teach, didn't you teach? You're also Jewish, you're also Orthodox. And he looks at them, and that's the story of our generation, and that's a good overture for tomorrow's class on the Rebbetzin. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya, thank you very much for honoring me with your presence, both those sitting in front of me and the many on the screen. Das für Danya.